Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Primetime True Crime Podcast. I'm Robin.
I'm Brody.
And tonight, in our second episode of the Narcotic Nightmares, we'll be covering the Melbourne Gangland Wars.
So, last week we looked at Ross Ulbricht and Silk Road, kind of an online drug crime. Today we're looking at one that happened, I think it ended a year before Ross Ulbricht started his website, wasn't it? 2010 ended?
Yeah, there's still a few bits and pieces that have been ongoing, but most, for what we know, it all ended up in...
This is where we're kind of ending our timeline?
Yeah, 2010.
Awesome. So do you want to just run us through briefly what you're going to talk about tonight?
Alright, so the Melbourne Gangland Wars resulted in the death of 36 criminal players in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia between 1998 and 2010. As I just mentioned, there are 36 criminal players. I have chosen only to focus on a few main points of this case because I otherwise would be here for a few hours, yeah. I believe. Not that I don't want to discuss all those different deaths.
But we can come back to it another time.
But I wanted to focus on the main points and our main character, which is Carl Williams.
Awesome. So just run us through. So what's your start and end goal here? What started this kind of gangland war, and what was the kind of culminating end point of it that we're focusing on?
So it started after World War II, and it ended with the death of Carl Williams.
After World War II?
Yeah, which started the formation of the Painters and Dockers Union. So they sort of formed after the end of World War II, and the union was responsible for the drug trade in the Melbourne, we know them as the Victoria markets. And by 1990, the problem with them had got so bad, Melbourne was described as the amphetamine capital of Australia.
I guess that the reason that union's important is because of docking kind of deals with how they would get drugs into the country?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it started with them. Yeah, so as I said, there were 36 deaths associated with the gangland war, so we're talking from 1998 to 2010 again.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on the key players, so as I mentioned, Carl Williams, Alphonse Gangitano, Mark and Jason Moran, Mick Gatto, and Andrew, also known as Benji Veneman.
Okay, so let's get into it.
Alright, so many of the murders were mostly retributive, and they were mostly payback for the death of other gang members, or conflicts regarding narcotics. It was a fight for power and control, and this played out into the public sphere when deaths and attacks happened in public and was no longer between the two groups.
So it became kind of a capture the throne
sort of situation. It became a power struggle between the two groups to see who could be the king of the narcotics.
The gangland.
As I said, 36, but that number may be much higher, as many murders police believe are associated haven't been solved.
Oh, okay, so a lot of unsolved sort of crimes it might have been.
If you are Australian, you would be familiar with the drama series Underbelly, which detailed the gangland war. This premiered on the Nine Network on the 13th of February 2008. Due to ongoing legal proceedings at the time in Victoria, the Justice Betty King disallowed this from airing in Victoria.
Yeah, I remember I was living in Melbourne in 08, and Mum was like a big fan of true crime, obviously, and couldn't watch Underbelly over there, so we had to. I don't think we could even buy it. I don't think it was like legal to. I don't know if it was like not legal to own, but you definitely couldn't buy it within Australia. We had to. I think we had to rely on our friends in Tassie kind of sending us somehow. I'm not quite sure how we watched it, but we ended up watching it eventually.
My personal opinion is it's the best season, as you find with some things. The first is always the best, but I also did enjoy the third season, which is
Godmar.
The King's Cross one.
Golden Mile.
Golden Mile, yeah, sorry. Anyway, so I'll tell you a bit about our key players. So, as I said, Alphonse Gangitano, he was born on the 22nd of April 1957.
So he was born after the unions had formed, like the Dockland ones.
Yeah, so he was floating about while they were running their sort of businesses. And
so how quickly did it stop being them in control, the union?
So I'm going to get to that.
I'm going to get to that point.
So just to keep in mind while I introduce everyone, the Painters and Dockers Union, their drug trade through the markets and the docks is still all going on until I'll get to
that. I assume the union wasn't founded with the prime incentive being to start a drug trade.
I don't think so.
So do you know how quickly it was kind of taken over by them? Was it like as soon as they formed someone in power sort of?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure about that. I didn't do much That's research okay. into the Dockers and Painters kind of Union, question, but I just sort yeah. of went with where it started and how it developed.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, so, yep, so Afonso Gangitano was born 1957. In later years, throughout the 1980s and the 1990s, he was a co-owner of a King Street nightclub, and he ran numerous fight promotions and other ventures that went on to include horse racing and protection racket. He was also involved himself in the drug trade.
That makes sense. So he kind of owns a nightclub, which gives him an easy distribution network. Yeah. He also runs protection, so, you know, people... He's also probably funding drugs at a place he's got protection at, so his people working in protection could also probably sell drugs on the side.
Exactly.
Nice little neat package he's got there.
All right, and we'll go to our main character, Carl Williams. He was born on the 13th of October 1970. He was involved in the drug-making business through his dad, George, and he became a drug dealer for the Moran brothers, who I'm about to introduce. Carl decided to do it alone and undercut the Moran brothers. He was a small-time drug runner who became the babyface leader of the drug war.
Yeah, I remember he started using their press, right, without yes. their knowledge. I think it was
started
ecstasy.
Started using all their equipment to...
Yeah, so which yeah. means he didn't have to pay the cost of overheads and that sort of thing. Yeah.
So we've got Jason Moran. He was born the 22nd of September 1967. During the 1990s, Jason and his brother Mark emerged as one of Melbourne's main dealers in party drugs. So methamphetamines,
yeah.
Ecstasy, Eckies, those sorts cocaine. Of things. During this time, he had a team of up-and-coming western suburb gangsters who, you correctly mentioned before filming this, the Colton Crew, as
yeah,
they became known.
Very associated with the Colton Football Club themselves, weren't they?
I think so. I can't exactly remember that link, but I... Yeah.
I think they were just, it's just a thing of being in Melbourne at the time, like, big in footy.
I know there's a scene in Underbelly where they're sitting at the footy ground, but it's empty.
If I remember what Mum was telling me correctly, they were kind of linked to the club just being, like, supporters and members, obviously.
So there's not a lot of information out about Mark himself. He did play a significant role with his brother in running things, but he was a lot more... I'll get into it a bit
closed
later,
off.
But he was a lot more closed off.
Yeah.
He wasn't, you know,
and this is also a time yeah. before social media and kind of sharing yourself was a common thing.
He wasn't as obvious as his
yeah.
brother.
It was kind of at the time where you kind of just lived your life and had a circle of friends. You weren't really open like we are now.
He was like, oh, yeah, my brother's doing this, so, you know.
And, like, from what you're saying, these Carl and the two brothers kind of started off as, like, kind of low-rung people and sort of moved their way up through the...
Yeah.
So it seems like one of those things where people talk about a lot where... You can start off at the bottom and just get so wrapped up in the drug culture and the crime itself that you end up getting in over your head and like kind of like how Ross was, where you have to start planning murders and protecting what you have, and the yep. greed and the lust kind of takes over.
And you're going to see all of those scenes very, very soon.
I think that's apparent with drugs. Just the like we said before, because it's illegal and obviously it's very highly sought after, especially in Melbourne, that the power will quickly corrupt you, and there's so much money involved and there's a thrill of kind of doing these crimes, and especially when you're, you know, a family thing as well. Like, you don't want to not be in the business because everyone you know is, and yeah.
Exactly, that's what we saw from, you know, Carl started from his dad, and Jason and Mark got involved, who I'll introduce later, but Mark and Jason, the Moran family, were already heavily involved in drug crime.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see there wasn't much opportunity for them. Like, they were doomed to be in this business and yeah. life, no matter what.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, almost.
Yeah.
Our next character was Andrew, and for the rest of this, I'll call him Benji Veneman. So Benji was born in 1975, and he basically was a hitman, who was suspected of 7 murders during the war. He was a close friend of Carl Williams and his wife, Roberta. When Carl's daughter, Dakota, was 18 months old, Veneman was hired by the Morans to kill Carl, as we've mentioned before, Brody touched on, for undercutting. On the night he was supposed to kill Carl, Veneman hid in the roof of their house, and according to Roberta herself, he heard her rocking Dakota back to sleep and he couldn't go through with the murder. In a twist, Veneman became Carl's right-hand man.
So he's kind of the muscle that Carl gets to kind of control his stake.
Yeah, he sort of just ditched Jason and Mark and was like...
Was he also kind of a symptom of growing up in that environment, do you know? Or
I think so, yeah. Yeah,
kind of like
it was
a troubled
crime
family.
Sort of family. Yeah. And although Roberta had previously rejected claims that she and Benji were intimate, in 2009 she admitted that he was her soulmate. So Underbelly portrays, I don't have any factual evidence, but Underbelly portrays that they did have a relationship during the time that Carl was A, in jail, or B, you know, running his drug.
I think while we're here and talking about Underbelly itself, it's important to tell people why we call it the Underbelly sort of situation. So basically what that means is you have your surface level of Melbourne where everyone kind of goes about their normal life, but there's this kind of underlying hidden secret of this whole drug trade and empire that people know because they're buying drugs and they see these people around, but you don't really talk about it because it's just not acceptable. The police are kind of paid off to keep it silent. The people, you know, they have hitmen for hire. It was just I remember Mum telling me it was just a scary time to be in Melbourne because there was all this stuff going on and you just, you know, hear no evil, speak no evil about it. Exactly. And that's what really makes this interesting, because kind of like Ross Ulbricht, where it's like the worst kept secret where everyone knows about it, but no one does anything about it until it kind of gets to that point where people, in, you know, like when it gets out reports about all these murders and crimes, that you kind of have, the police have to step in and say, well, we've got to look like we're doing something. Similar to Ross, how once he started doing hits and trying to get people killed, they stepped in. Once it starts escalating too high, the police will eventually step in. But it's just an evidence of it was too little too late and a lot of damage had been done. And yeah,
there was just a lot of corruption, a lot of people being paid off, a lot of secrecy, as I'll get into.
And you see this a lot throughout every history of crime where it's like always the worst kept secrets, but like in the Prohibition era, everyone knew what they were doing, but no one really says anything at the time because it's just too risky. It's not worth your house getting destroyed or you getting targeted personally. Yeah.
And our final character, he's not really a key player, even though he is a main character, but is important to a later story.
Yeah.
Well, not story, a later part of
okay.
our dive into
timeline.
Yes. We've got Mick Gatto, who was born in 1955. He was an Australian businessman, but he was suspected of being heavily involved in the criminal underworld, and he was thought of as a standover man.
Okay.
The words are thanks escaping for that. Me. All right, so the way I've crafted this episode is I've just done, rather than focusing on each of their individual stories,
yep.
I've done a timeline.
So similar just gonna, to how I did it?
Yeah, we're just going to run through a timeline and we'll go from there. All
right, get us started. Where does our story begin?
1995.
Okay.
Right, so just remember that we've still vaguely got the Dockers and Painters Union old blokes floating about. They're still doing their thing, vaguely. Yep. So on the 7th of February 1995, Greg Workman was shot dead by Alphonse Gangitano at a house party which was celebrating the release of another friend on bail for armed robbery.
Okay.
Gangitano was seen arguing with another friend, not Workman, another person, and had to be physically restrained and the police were called. The situation appeared calm to the police, fine, you know, just a rowdy bunch of blokes.
Yeah, kind of a Saturday night.
So the police left and that was it.
Yep.
What happened next is a bit conflicting. No one's entirely sure what the actual truth is.
Yep.
But the story goes that Greg Workman owed Alphonse a significant amount of money he borrowed to pay a gambling debt. And Alphonse was so worked up by his earlier argument, he shot Workman 8 times.
Jesus.
This is seen as the start of the what we know as the gangland
wars.
Because it was the first time a dispute had been public. And 2 witnesses made statements and were placed in witness protection, and Gangitano was up for murder.
So, as we said before, this is kind of that underbelly, best-kept secret sort of creeping to the surface now. Kind of the roots going through the pavement where people start to notice it.
So, as I said, the women were placed in witness protection, but somehow the women were left without protection at a cabin, and Gangitano was able to work out their location.
Ah.
Frightened, they reached out to Jason Moran for advice, and they were persuaded to redact their statements.
I assume Moran was a friend of
Gangitano's. Yeah. Yes. Gangitano paid for the two to have a long holiday.
Oh.
To Disneyland.
Ooh.
And without witnesses, Gangitano was cleared on all charges.
So this is a clear first example of people doing the wrong thing, highly illegal things, and paying their way out of it or having connections to get out of it.
And it's become public, so it was outside, these 2 witnesses saw it, and to shut them up, Gangitano paid for them to disappear for a little bit.
If he goes to jail, do you think the rest of the story happens?
Hmm, it's interesting.
I'm going to keep asking you this at certain points. If police had done their job properly, these women had protection, weren't paid off, and were able to testify, does this rest of the story exist? Or do we stop here? At what point could the police have made a major impact and lives could have been saved?
Honestly, I think if they'd... See, the interesting thing with the next bit part of the story I'm going to talk about, if Gangitano was in jail, we would assume he'd almost have life for shooting someone 8 times.
Yeah, it would be first-degree murder.
This bit wouldn't have happened, and then therefore the next part after that wouldn't have happened.
It's just a domino effect where this one incident getting away with murder literally has kicked off everything else.
Yeah, so at the moment there's no relationship between Gangitano and Carl Williams, nothing there.
Yeah.
Just Carl's a small time.
As someone studying law, how disappointed are you with the police's efforts so far?
I think if we think about it in today's context, it's disappointing, but we have to think about it in the 1995 context where there was corruption, there was people being paid off, there were people being paid not to investigate, there were people...
Being paid to go to Disneyland.
How do you... If your witnesses say they don't want to testify, there's not much you can do definitely. Beyond that.
I just wanted to point out, because it's easy for us to say now, oh, they should have done more, but I think context is important. This is a very different
time. Money talks.
It's also, like I said before, this isn't an era of someone just tweeting, oh my God, I heard shots, someone's been shot in my... There's no big mass movements. Like, things just get swept under the rug a lot easier than what they do now. Like, if this happened today, people would talk about it.
So the next part, you probably remember this famous scene, Tarantula by Pendulum. Alphonse Gangitano and Jason Moran, along with another associate, Mark John McNamara.
It's okay, move on.
Yep. Were charged over an attack in the Sports Bar nightclub in King Street, Melbourne. Just remember that Gangitano owns some of King Street. On the 19th of December 1995. So Moran was sent to jail.
Mark or Jason?
Jason.
Yeah.
It was Alphonse and Jason.
So
in this as well, I just to give some context, they sort of went in there. Alphonse went in there sort of look. Well, I think it was Jason actually. Jason went in there looking for a fight. Next minute, there was 8-ball cues being smacked into unsuspecting, not involved.
So this is just a violent outburst against random members of the public.
Yep.
How soon after the shooting was this?
So that was 19th of December, and Greg Workman died on the 7th of February, so about 9 months.
So a bit of time's passed. So he probably just got cleared of his... How quickly was the trial dropped after the shooting, do you know?
They paid for the people to go into witness protection. They moved them out there. They sorted all of that. So it was probably a few months. And then Gangitano obviously paid them off and sent them away.
So why did he do this? Was there any... What was the thing that made Mark want to go in there and...
Jason
want to go in there and just start smacking skulls?
He just wanted to vent. He just wanted to... There was no drug... No, nothing. No, they just wanted to go smack some skulls.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Seems like a healthy guy.
There is, I don't know if there is footage, maybe the underbelly footage, but you get a picture if you...
There would be footage for evidence, but...
So Jason received a term of imprisonment. Gangitano didn't.
How long was Jason's imprisonment?
I'm not 100% sure. So he just received a term of imprisonment. I can't actually find the...
Would have been an undisclosed thing then.
Yeah, a set time he spent in jail. Right. But as we just discussed... If Gangitano was arrested and sent to jail, if he would gone to jail for the murder of Greg Workman.
It might have still happened though, like Jason.
Well, it was Jason that sort of instigated that one.
Yeah. But even if like Gangitano went to prison for this, was he assaulting anyone himself or...
Yes, they were both.
So how did he get off, do you know?
Not sure.
Just general corruption?
I think so.
Yeah, couldn't get his friend off though.
No.
Nice buddy.
I think Jason was, what I was reading, that Jason was identified by most of the victims, not Alphonse.
Ah, okay.
So that was...
So if Gangitano goes to prison for this one, does the next event happen?
Well, this one isn't necessarily, but the one after.
Right, so it is quite a domino effect.
Yeah. We're now in 1996, So Jason Moran's in prison, as far as we know. The arrest of major drug player John William Samuel Higgs in 1996 happened. At the time he was arrested, he was the number one amphetamine seller in Melbourne.
Yep.
The downfall of Higgs and his closer associates, so the Docker and Painters Union,
yep.
meant that new players on the scene, such as Carl Williams and the Moran family, were able to step up and begin operating.
So we see kind of a shift to a newer generation of drug dealers away from the kind of establishment and, like, order of the union themselves.
Yep.
So I think this happens a lot when there's an open market, so to say, on crime, where there's, I assume it gets really bloody as there's a tussle for control. Awesome. Let's get into that then.
Speaking of blood and domino effects, in 1998, Alphonse Gangitano was shot and killed in the laundry of his home in his underwear. So coming back to your, if he went to jail on a life sentence.
Well, we don't know. It could have been someone else in his place. I assume that this whole 2 year segment was just a tussle for power and the kind of
just the replacement of the old fellas.
The changing of the guard. Yeah.
So, unfortunately, Gangitano was shot dead in his underwear.
Yeah.
The coroner's report linked his death with Graham Kinneberg, who was one of the older members. Not a new player. He was a member of the
union.
And Jason Moran. So, by the time Gangitano was dead, Jason was out of jail.
Was the union still supplying, through their work with the dockyard, people with drugs? Or do you know that at all?
No, I don't.
Yeah. So was there do you know if there was an investigation done into the union, into their involvement into the, like, drug scene so far?
Yeah. So they were, when John Higgs was arrested, they all went down with him.
So I assume that maybe there's a reshuffling the union or...
So the
doctor... How public was it? Do you know?
Very public. He was the big player.
Yeah. So I guess that's maybe the union got kind of scrubbed or reworked.
Well, this is where we have the separation from the union through to the Colton crew and the other distinct...
I guess you could call them entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So that murder was linked with Jason Moran.
Yeah.
So Jason's out of jail, obviously. A lot of people think that it may have been linked to the nightclub issue where Alphonse didn't go down for anything.
2 years. Oh, you think Jason killed him because
got away with it, yes.
But weren't they friends?
That was one scenario.
I don't buy that.
There was evidence linking both Kinneberg and Jason Moran to Gangitano's house in the night, which included blood and skin cells.
Yeah.
It couldn't be established who pulled the trigger. Both were excused from giving evidence on the grounds that they might incriminate themselves. Many believe Jason fired the shot.
Oh, okay, so I'm unpopular here. I just feel like there's more, I guess, it just makes more sense that it's a union
revenge. Yeah, so what they thought as well was that due to the Greg Workman shooting, here's another theory for you, the Greg Workman shooting and the issue in the nightclub, which you could argue was more Jason, but they thought that Gangitano was drawing too much attention the underbelly scene, and that's why he had to be taken out.
That makes sense. I guess he's kind of a hothead sort of guy. Yeah, I can buy that.
All right, so now we're in 19...
Kind of like a nothing personal hit. Like, you just need to be dealt with.
You need to shut up, pretty much.
Nothing personal, kid.
So now we're in 1999.
Yeah.
So,
Y2K's on the horizon.
So, at this point, Carl Williams is 29.
Oh.
And on his 29th...
He's the same age as my dad, just random fact.
On his 29th birthday, instead of getting a birthday cake from Jason and Mark Moran, he was shot in the abdomen.
Hey, that's all right.
He survived, and he said he blacked out and didn't know who shot him. Police believe...
Wait, is that legit, or is that what he told police?
No, that's what he told the police. He'd blacked out and
Does he know, or is he just
you can make your own decision there.
I feel like he's lying.
So police believe this occurred because he sold them a bad amphetamine batch, and as we mentioned before, he was undercutting the Moran.
Sorry, brothers. Sold who a bad batch?
The Morans, a bad amphetamine.
So they were buying from him?
As well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So following this, Carl decided he was going to go to war with the Moran family and essentially annihilate every one of them.
So he's just fueled not by territory, but kind of a revenge now. And the territory was just a nice side effect.
Yeah, so at this point, Carl's been a bit of a pushover. He's decided to...
Fatboy, didn't they call him?
They called him Fatboy.
Yeah.
Undercutting Jason and Mark, which is quite dangerous on the side.
Yeah.
And now...
Well, it's not just undercutting. He's also would be stealing their business as well. So he's not only using their... Because, you got to picture, the resources, the wear and the equipment, the power, the attention drawn from him operating kind of off hours. But then he's also... competing with them in the same market at a lower price they can't match. And I assume they're also paying him for his work. So imagine how annoyed you'd be if you were paying the guy who's ripping you off and then making it harder for you to pay him.
Absolutely.
That's insane. That's such an insane situation. I'd shoot him. Where is he? I'll shoot him right now.
I think this came out of Underbelly again. Please remember that Underbelly was loosely, but well, not loosely.
It's dramatised.
It's dramatised, but there was a suggestion that Mark and Jason thought, you know, they should have just shot him then and there, and maybe the next chapter wouldn't have happened.
Well, that's another thing, right? If X had happened, why wouldn't? Like, this is just a domino effect of a story.
And then later in 1999, Carl Williams and his father George were arrested for multiple drug offences after a raid. They were found in possession of around 25,000 amphetamine tablets, a loaded pistol, 6.95 kilos of powder with street value of up to 20 million. These charges were never tried due to police corruption by the officers in the raid.
Does it, going back, I know we're focusing on that case a lot this episode, but going back to the Ross where there was police corruption and he got such a long sentence, does that annoy you a little bit? That there's such a difference in, kind of like, as we said before, like, Ross is the first to do it online. This is
1999, though.
Yeah, but this is like a version of the police where it's kind of an industry they're aware of and they're just kind of letting stuff go like this. Whereas in a case like that where it's online, they're quite unaware of it, they're just throwing the book. Because, in my opinion, these guys have done a lot worse than our other case and they seem to be getting away with literal murder.
They did seem very, a word that was used to describe them, that was that they felt that they were invincible, especially Carl.
I don't disagree. I think they are.
Alright, so we're going to move into the 2000 to 2002 period, so turn of the century. Francesco, I'm going to try and pronounce this, Francesco Benvenuto was shot while sitting in his driveway. Mark Moran and Benji Veneman were later the prime suspects.
Why? Why was he shot?
He was shot because, okay, I'm not quite sure, but
yeah, that's okay.
He was shot then.
We tried.
But next was a big turn of events. Mark Moran, so Jason's brother. So Mark hasn't really played a big role as far as,
yeah.
Mark Moran was shot dead as he was taking the bins out, inside.
Okay.
Out his home, outside of his home.
I used this as an excuse when after I saw Underbelly to not take the bins out for a solid week before my parents told me to shut up and do it.
So the reason I mentioned Francesco Benvenuto.
Bento.
Mark Moran's murder was originally thought to be retribution for that murder.
So it's another revenge hit.
Dino Debra is thought to have carried
out. Oh, what's his name?
Dino Debra.
Dino? I'm a big fan of that.
Is thought to have carried out the murder on behalf of Carl Williams.
So is he Discount Benji or?
Yeah.
But he's got a, oh, they've both got cool names. Tell us in the comments if you think he's got a better name.
Dino or Benji?
Jesus.
Both
dog names.
Mark was supposed to be under close supervision by the police the night he died, but
glad that worked out.
Suspiciously, this was not operating the night he died.
That's crazy, bro.
Police corruption.
Yeah.
That's not going on.
Money talks.
So now we're in 2003.
Yeah.
Task Force Piranha was set up by the
Piranha?
Piranha.
Oh, big fan of that.
Was set up by the Victoria Police to investigate Melbourne's underworld. Piranha.
Yep.
Yep.
Tarantula.
Task Force was established by Christine Nixon. She was pushed for.
I've heard that name before.
Yeah,
she was. Is she the larger lady who wears the hat in videos?
With blonde hair, yeah.
Yeah.
I think she was the one that Scott Morrison was like, how dare she go out to dinner?
Yeah, that's the lad.
I think that was Christine Nixon.
Oh, I like it. I like a little hat that I saw her wear once. Or it could have been an actor. Not quite sure.
So this task force was pushed for staff, and they received many setbacks in the code of silence between victims and individuals involved in the gangland. As we already mentioned with the original Greg Workman shooting, the issue there was the witnesses were pretty much paid to shut up. So how can you solve, how can you investigate all these crimes if nobody's going to help you and talk?
Was there any evidence of her being corrupt, or was she kind of a straight shooter?
Straight shooter.
Okay. Is that why they kind of got her onto the task force, I assume, just to kind of straighten it out?
I've just written a note here. Many were often killed before they could talk or testify.
Yeah, once again, we're just seeing the if you talk out at this sort of time, you're just instantly shot, so why would you?
I know back in the 90s there was a member of the... Like, he was a close associate of the Hells Angels motorcycle gang. And anyway, he went and shot some low-level drug dealers in their workshop. Anyway, when they worked it all out, his wife chose to testify against him.
Yep.
And a few years after he was sent to prison, she was shot dead in her bed sleeping next to her son.
Jesus. I think an interesting thing that I picked up on is we've gone from paying off our witnesses to just shooting them.
Just getting rid of them.
So this new guard that's, like, I guess, separated from the union and now, like, their own sort of thing, have just become more and more violent. I don't know if that's an escalation of the times or whether it's just a new sort of system where instead of, like, an honour and, like, union kind of paying things away, they've just turned to, why would I give someone 50 grand when I can just use a bullet? But it's quite a... I can see why the police were getting... As we said, like, once this underbelly started coming to the surface and people started dying instead of going to Disneyland, it was... I mean, as much corruption as you want, they need to start doing something before the government steps in and says, what's going on?
So just remembering back to our main characters, we've lost Alphonse Gangitano, we've lost Mark Moran.
Yeah.
We still have Jason Moran, Mick Gatto, and Benji, and Carl.
What are big players.
But unfortunately, in 2003, Jason Moran was shot dead.
At the footy, right?
Yep, with his bodyguard.
Do you remember the footy?
I miss the footy. As I sat in a van at an Auskick game watching Jason's kids. Five children witnessed the shooting, as well as Jason's six-year-old twins. The gunman, nicknamed The Runner, he was eventually identified. Did he run? Yes, because he ran like from the car park over this bridge to a waiting vehicle.
Oh.
Yeah, that's why he got that nickname.
I would have been stuffed by the end of the ground.
He later told police that Carl Williams was the person who paid him to kill Moran and his bodyguard, and that Williams had paid him less than the fee that was originally promised. Williams did later plead guilty to the murder of Jason Moran.
Well, Williams wouldn't be guilty to the murder, but the...
For arranging.
I think this is another instance of just such a public... They've just lost all
I think this one's subtlety. The most horrifying.
Yeah, I think... I don't know if this is just Carl himself, but we're seeing, like, a bin shooting... And, like, it's just getting so... They don't care anymore. Like you said, they think they're invincible.
Oh, he definitely is going with his word of rampaging through the Moran family.
He's just getting away with it.
So he's taken out the two brothers.
I assume, like, it's not a secret he's on the radar, right?
Everyone knows.
Everyone knows the players and nothing can be done about it.
But, yeah.
It's quite a contrast, once again, like, just why we do the two-block thing, but to the other case where it's all secretive, no one knows, to this one where it's just...
Everyone knows, but...
Everyone's aware. Everyone, like, Mum was telling me when we, like, think, everyone knew what Carl Williams and that were up to. It wasn't a secret, but nothing can be done about it because they're so rich from the drugs and they're so protected from the fear of just being shot at the football.
In the end of 2003, Carl Williams was arrested and charged with making threats to kill a Piranha Task Force detective and their girlfriend. Carl was bailed 2 weeks later.
So Carl made threats to them?
Yes.
What kind of threats are we talking?
Like, I'm gonna kill you.
But over what sort of medium, do you know?
I believe it was the phone, because...
He called them up because I assume they were bugging his house.
I think so, yeah. Or maybe it was bugging.
I remember an underbelly scene where Carl ripped out a wire or something and then just starts berating the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was bailed for that. Paid his way out of that.
Who would have guessed? Did you know Carl Williams had money?
Mm. We're now in 2004, so we're about, you know, 6-7 years into the... Many of the murders police suspect were ordered by Carl Williams. Many of the murders were discussed.
Yep.
As I said, there are 36, so a lot more have been going on during this time. Yeah. And they believe many of them were carried out by Benji. Williams went on the record with the news magazine The Bulletin, and he denied that he had paid Benji $100,000 for 5 of those murders.
It's pretty cheap.
I feel like you're asking, yeah, $500.
I feel like I'm asking for a fucking house or something.
Federal Justice Minister Chris Ellison announced the Australian Crime Commission would investigate the murders.
Yep.
And
how corrupt were they, do you know?
think they was just sort of coming.
They're kind of out of Melbourne, aren't they?
Just sort of coming out of corruption now.
Yeah. And also, this seems like an Australian-wide force, which isn't tied to Melbourne, where most of the corruption's happening.
Well, I think there was also a fear of, you know, just getting involved at this point was beyond dangerous.
Yeah.
So on the 23rd of March 2004, Benji Benjamin, who was at the time 28 years old, was fatally shot by Mick Gatto. So Mick's now come up. Sorry, he hasn't been in the story much. Sorry, Mick.
He's on hiatus.
In the Colton, which is a suburb in Melbourne.
The Colton Crew, yep.
Colton Pizza Restaurant, after an argument. Gatto was charged with his murder. The police alleged that Gatto had set a trap for Veneman by inviting him. In 2004, Gatto was charged with the murder of Benji. Gatto was remanded in custody for 18 months, and he was found not guilty during the trial.
What?
Gatto claimed he had acted in self-defense after Benji pulled out a 38 and threatened to kill him. Gatto claimed that during a struggle, he was able to turn the gun around on Benji and fire one shot into his neck and one shot in the eye.
And how's Roberta about this?
She is inconsolable. She is not having a good time. Her husband's just killing everyone left, right, and centre, and now she's lost her soulmate.
How much do you buy Gatto's story?
I don't know. I always thought this one was,
I mean, Benji is a trained killer.
I feel like that it got to the point where someone was like, we need to take out Benji.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Benji was just, I guess, killing everyone off for Carl.
He really is the... I mean, it seems like Carl brought the... I know the bar thing before, and like there was a couple shootings before that, but Carl's really brought the blood to this feud. Which, I mean, was started by the Moran, so...
So now the only characters we have left are Carl Williams and Mick Gatto. We've gone from, you know, five down to two.
Yeah.
And then a week, well, 8 days after Benji was shot dead, 58-year-old Lewis Moran, the father of Jason Moran and stepfather of Mark Moran, was shot and killed in broad daylight by two balaclava-clad men in the front bar of the Brunswick Club. Carl Williams paid for the hit, and he later pled guilty to this murder.
So he's ended the Morans off?
Yep, so we've got the dad gone, we've got the two brothers gone.
And the wife remains.
Wife remains, but that's not...
We're not ordering a hit on a mum.
I wish that was the end of it. In May 2008, Evangelos was convicted of killing Lewis Moran. And in 2009, he was sentenced to life in prison. He will be eligible in 2039. So he killed him on behalf of Carl, just in case that wasn't clear.
Once again, we say Carl.
Carl.
Carl kills people.
So, in June, so what's March? 3rd month. June's 6 months. 3 months after Lewis Moran was killed, the Piranha Task Force detectives arrested Carl Williams for conspiracy to murder.
Not on drugs?
No, he was done on murder. The drugs didn't get him. I couldn't find why there was such a gap between Carl's arrest for conspiracy and his actual trial. Because
that happens a lot.
There's a 3-year gap.
Yeah, both sides have to find evidence and discuss evidence. Because for a trial like this where there's so much corruption and obviously the TV show at the time, you have to see what evidence will be allowed in court and what won't. And that's almost like takes a lot of time in general. But for a case like this where... If you show the evidence evidence of something that might not be true or isn't backed up, then the jury hears it. That's a big kind of no-no, and everyone kind of knows about this. So making sure your evidence is correct, non-corruptible, and so say if one evidence is corruptible, right? They bring it to court, the jury has to be thrown out. That's a longer trial.
Mm.
So you have to make sure it's correct.
So on the 28th of February 2007... Carl Williams pleaded guilty in the Supreme Court of Victoria to the murders of Lewis Moran, his son Jason Moran, and Mark Marlier, who I didn't touch on. His name was initially suppressed by the court. Williams also pled guilty to conspiracy to murder gangland rival Mario Condello, who was also a member of the Carlton Crew, another person I haven't touched on. A suppression order prevented the media from reporting this until the day of sentencing. Under a deal with police, Carl Williams was not charged for his alleged involvement in orchestrating the murder of Mark Moran.
So, did he plead guilty due to evidence, or because he wanted people to know that he did it?
I think there was enough evidence and witnesses that were coming forward.
So it wasn't just a, I don't care at this point?
I think it got to the point with Williams that there were so many witnesses that weren't afraid, because he was locked up, obviously.
He wasn't doing smart killings either.
They weren't afraid of him.
He's also lost his he's lost his muscle.
So they just all testified on him.
I guess also, once he stopped using Benji, he had to use people he was just paying, and there's a lot less loyalty.
And I think
loyalty.
He had to use, like, dodgy... Oh, I don't want to say there's dodgy killers, but, like...
People weren't loyal to him.
Mm.
Yeah.
Whereas Benji was trained, he was loyal, he was, you know, successful.
He obviously had a relationship with Roberta and had a vested interest in making sure Roberta's... obviously, her money, and I don't want to have a go at Roberta. I don't have an opinion on her. But just making sure that she was well kept up was obviously a priority of Benji, and keeping Carl out of trouble and alive was the best way to do it. Because, like, the hits that Benji did seemed to be... There was a reason behind them, either revenge for Carl or a business strategy. He wasn't just doing, like, the first one where he was beating people up in a pub or shooting someone over an argument. Like, these were murders because, in their eyes, they had to, and I think that's really important with this case.
I forgot to mention with Lewis Moran back into
the... Like, for instance, the Lewis Moran one
is just not
relevant to anything.
I forgot to mention something with that. It's pretty well... thought that Lewis died because he was saying, after the deaths of both his sons, he was saying someone needs to take out Carl.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, he's just a old man yelling at the clouds. Like, you don't need to kill him. And I think after Benji died, Carl just started killing.
And then it was also revealed that Carl Williams was serving a sentence of 21 years for the 2003 murder of Michael Marshall. The outcome of this trial had also been suppressed.
Yeah.
So just to wrap up, he was found guilty of the murder of Lewis and Jason Moran, Mark Marlier, Mario Condello, and Michael Marshall.
What was his sentence? We'll get into it. I want to see if it beats the other trial.
Oh, did I not write that? Hang on.
Quick break. What did he get?
Life imprisonment and non-parole for 35 years.
How many life sentences? Just the one?
Just the one.
So a less sentence than Ross.
Yeah, and Ross technically didn't physically cult
work. I'll have you know, my boy Ross should be free.
Stop. So, unfortunately, that wasn't the end.
Oh, no.
In 2009, so this was 2 years after Carl was sentenced, Desmond Moran was shot and killed in Melbourne's northwest.
Who the fuck is Desmond?
Des Moran was the brother of Lewis Moran.
Okay.
And uncle to Mark and Jason.
Yep.
So, didn't stop.
Why was he killed?
No idea.
Okay.
I think that they wanted to clear up a loose end with Desmond.
Okay.
So they no, I know what this is. I'm sorry.
Okay.
He's Lewis's wife Judy wanted to get rid of Desmond for some reason.
Okay.
She was convicted.
Should have killed Judy while we're at it.
Yeah, she was
convicted. Is she the only one who's left?
Yes, Judy Moran is the only one who survived, apart from Mark and Jason's, like, wives and kids.
Jesus.
So, in 2010, Carl Williams died while incarcerated at Barwon Prison after being bashed by fellow inmate Matthew Johnson.
I remember this. This was in the training room, right? He was left alone with one person. That one person turned out to be...
And the cameras weren't on for some reason.
Crazy. I remember that being massive news at the time.
Williams' funeral was held on the 30th of April, 2010, in Essendon. He was buried in a golden coffin.
Not even the criminals die like the rest of us, eh?
No, he has to always go over the top.
He's a fat boy.
That's definitely the...
Alright, and that's all we've got?
That is the end of our story, so... Obviously there's still, you know, drug crime and...
I think there'll always be drug crime. Similar to with Silk Road, there's always going to be an avenue for people to get what they want, and people to make money off that need.
But it's definitely not on the scale that we saw through the gangland wars.
Definitely. I don't think... Like, it's just like the cultivation, right, of a power struggle that also has a revenge element to it, which is quite a scary thought to have. Any questions or queries for me?
I was just going to mention as well, so his daughter Dakota is now...
Hot? Sorry, what were you saying?
18, 19.
Yep.
And the way she deals with it is she was asked directly on TV, you know, all these other kids' dads died. What do you think about that? And her response was, I can't think about that. I just need to remember my dad for my dad, not as what he was convicted for.
I think that's true. I think every criminal has, like, the two faces. Like, for Carl, his drug empire was his job. It was his business. And obviously, his the face he wears at home is different to the one he had around his kids.
Mm.
I don't think we have to discount him being a loving father to her, but obviously having an idea and a kind of perspective on what your dad did will always haunt her. But it's also not her... It's not her place to answer for her dad's crimes.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. Any other questions or queries you want to bring up to me?
No, that's the end of this story.
What are your thoughts on the domino effect of it? Like, do you think the police could have done more or less to sort of prohibit this? Or do you think the corruption was just such a alluring thing?
I honestly wonder if Jason and Mark hadn't shot Carl that day, or they had killed him that day. It's all what ifs.
Someone could have just stepped into that vacuum as well. Yeah. We'd have a situation where the Morans were the kings of Melbourne.
It's just a very big what if. What if this didn't happen? What if this did happen? Would all these people still be alive?
Yeah.
I
think we'll do more comparative stuff between the two cases in our third episode, kind of our wrap up one. But I think there's a lot of things we can talk about with the two cases in kind of weighing them up together. But yeah, I think we've covered a lot tonight. Thanks, Robin, for telling us that story.
That's okay.
Do we have any questions or recommendations from fans? You looked that up. We recently had our Facebook page kind of burst in popularity. I think we've got over 120 likes on Facebook, which isn't much, but we started from nothing and we're a slowly growing community.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Yeah, we've just cracked over 50 plays on our podcast episodes. So thanks, you guys, for listening. I think we have about 10 constant listeners, so people who listen to most episodes, which is nice. So
I just feel sorry for those people that like hearing the sound of my voice.
I feel sorry for the shitty audio, but we're going to start somewhere.
Yeah, we were talking the other day that if, you know, people were really getting keen and were getting a lot of airplay, we'd definitely consider investing in better equipment and...
Yeah, maybe getting some more people on or having a regular person to talk to, but obviously with COVID we can't do that, but another avenue for that. But yeah, this has been quite fun, we're enjoying it.
I had a friend, shout out to Narissa, she said she's been enjoying the podcast while she's been cleaning at home, and she said that she'd love to see a Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, at some point.
I had a recommendation for Andrew, owner of Area 52 in Hobart, if you want to check him out, help our local business. He's recommended the new Tiger King. We were interested in that too, obviously we've seen a lot of the memes of bitch Cara Baskin. I think that might be one we do later on Netflix specials. We'll talk about this more in our third episode when we talk about what we can do in the future. But great suggestion. I think Netflix is bringing out a new episode for it.
I think so. Relating to... We won't the spoil backlash? It. But relating to the husband. We won't discuss spoilers. But
obviously, with the Netflix, I know this Carol Baskin thing is a big meme at the moment. But just remember that you're hearing the story from someone who has been shown to balloon the truth of things, is a convicted criminal, whether you agree that he should be or not, and also has a grudge against this lady. So just don't harass her. I've seen a lot of people harassing her online.
And the wildlife page, I won't name it so people don't go and look it up.
Just don't be a shitty person. We're a big fan of innocent until proven guilty, unless you're proven not guilty later on, like Cardinal Pell. But you know, like, don't be a shitty person. Respect that. It's fun to have memes, it's fun to joke, but just remember that you are joking and sharing obviously a traumatic experience of a lady who is a real person. Like, that's why when we do these cases, we make sure to be respectful and, you know, not make light or jokes too much. But
we like to keep it lighthearted because these are real people. Is serious, but
the difference between true crime and like a movie or a fictional piece is that you're dealing with real people who have families, like we said with Dakota. Like, it's easy to call Carl all the names on the sun, say he's the worst criminal ever, but
at the bottom line is that was her dad.
Yeah. So as always, be respectful, wash your hands, and thanks for tuning in. I've been Robin.
What?
I've been Robin.
Okay.
Who have you been?
Oh, I forgot to do what I was going to do at the start of the episode.
What?
Big shout out to Brody. Happy 23rd birthday for yesterday.
Thank you. I feel old and I smell old.
No, nobody likes you.
No. Nobody likes me at all. All right. Thanks, guys. See you next episode.
Bye.